And welcome back. Thanks for joining us today here on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you, filling in for Charles Showalter. I'd like to send some thanks out to just two of the sponsoring organizations we have for our programming here at the Union Edge, the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, as well as the mine workers. We thank them for all their support. Also, you can always check us out on our app. You can listen to us anytime. You can pick that up at the iTunes. You can pick it up for your Android device as well. So it is time for Just Transitions here on the Union Edge. And as always, we have Dr. Patty DeMarco here with us. Patty, thanks for coming to the studio.
Hi, Nathan. It's really good to be here talking about Just Transitions, labor, environment, and health issues. And I am really thrilled today to have as my guest my friend Kirsi Jansa, who is a filmmaker and journalist originally from Finland, now operating out of Pittsburgh. And she has done a number of really exciting things in the transition, beginning with a series of short stories about the gas fracking industry called Gas Rush Stories. And we met when she interviewed me as part of that. And now she has done a series on sustainability pioneers. Kirsi, welcome to our show. I'm glad to have
you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How did you get into doing things like this based on sustainability and moving away from fossil fuels?
Well, while I was in Finland, I was working for the Finnish Broadcasting Company for a program called Ecoist. And we were educating people in an entertaining way, talking about how to make sustainable decisions. And it was in 1994 when they sent me to do an interview with a British public health expert on the health impacts of climate change.
Oh.
So climate change has been on my radar for a long time.
Even before it was popular, actually.
Oh, yeah. We covered the climate renewable energy, and we did stories on those. So then in...
There was a time where climate change was not in discussion. It's hard to remember that time, but it did exist.
Yeah.
1994, yeah. Certainly.
But in Europe, it's just different. It just seems that it was... And I'll talk more about that later, but... And that was then when I came here in 2008. So I then, thanks to the funding from the Heinz Endowments, I started producing a series called Gas Rush Stories. And the idea was to approach it from different perspectives so that we can, as a society, we can make informed decisions. And I wanted to go and talk with DEP, with the gas industry and landowners, as well as fracktivists and people who oppose fracking. But it was impossible. I just kept running into closed doors, and this discussion was not possible. And at the same time, I was also amazed somehow about the lack of discussion about climate change and about the solutions.
Yeah.
And so when I was producing then the final episode, Gas Rush Stories, I went and interviewed Harry Lehmann in Germany, who was the head of German Umweltbundesamt, which is the local EPA and their sustainable strategies division or something like that. And I asked him that what needs to happen in the U.S. before U.S. is where Germany producing, I think, 20% at that time, 5 years ago. And he said that, number one, you have to educate the people. Europe started this in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And next morning I woke up and I'm like, that's my new project.
Yeah.
And so I've been producing sustainability pioneers since 2014.
And we started talking about it at the end of that Gas Rush series. And I was at that time also looking at helping people visualize the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't create a movement on no. You create a movement on I'm excited about what you want to go toward. So helping people visualize what we can do instead of the past fossil process. And Kirsi, you've brought out so many wonderful images and ideas and just examples of people actually doing sustainability projects.
It's really inspiring just to be able to bear witness to this reality that is emerging around the world. And I'm just still amazed how little we hear about the solutions.
Yeah.
And I'm still amazed how well-educated Americans, how amazed they are once they hear about a town of about 7,000 people in Germany producing 400%, 300% more renewable energy than they consume. And people are like, what? how is that possible?
Yeah.
Why are we not talking about
this? And
the
thing is, these are not things that need big technology breakthroughs. These are things that are using technology that's readily available today. Just changing the way we think about using energy and being positive about our own capability to make changes that matter. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, is one of the most important parts of Kiersey's work, is that you do empower people to feel like they're not helpless. And I think a lot of the problem that we're having with climate change is a psychological problem, mm-hmm. is it seems so huge and so overwhelming and so impossible that you can't possibly do anything. And you've explored that a good bit, yes?
And I'm going to explore it even more in the final episode.
Yeah.
That's going to be one of the main talking points.
Yeah.
Because it is so scary, mm-hmm. that it's just natural that our like natural defense mechanisms kick in. That is just, I'm so busy with my own life that don't talk to me about that. I feel I cannot do anything anyway. Some people are afraid that, well, the government is going to come and start regulating. So we have different fears what comes. But it's just, as long as we just give up to these fears, we just remain incapable. We remain in apathy, climate apathy. We cannot take the action that we need to take as a society if we are to get out of this mess.
So what are your objectives for the Sustainability Pioneer series when you moved away from doing gas rush stories? What were you trying to accomplish with the Sustainability Pioneer series?
It was to vision this different kind of a future. And this is, I think, where we are right now. And there's more and more understanding that we need to create a more sustainable narrative.
Yeah.
That the doom and gloom is not just getting us anywhere. We have to recognize that it is. All this stuff is real, despite all the misinformation campaigns that there are out there, and several media outlets are still disseminating those, that it's real. But at the same time, we have to create and see a different future. And we have to invite people to be part of this.
Yeah.
And so learn about it and then start these community conversations on all levels, whether it's local level, state level, or federal level, even in the families. What can we do as individuals?
Mm-hmm. And we've done a class together on climate conversations where we get people to actually role play and, okay, what do you say to your recalcitrant uncle over dinner at Thanksgiving or a family supper to get them to understand you have common ground? And we found some common ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some things that people will resonate with.
I think that the whole thing is just somehow, and I think that's also the difference between European and the U.S. cultures, is just somehow like, and it might be that I have a bit of a rosy glasses that in Europe we have this consensus culture and we start with the, but in a multi-party system you make your case, then you have to negotiate and try to find a solution that works. Here it's so often it's just like debate. It's a winner and a loser. But with climate change, we are all in the same boat, whether you believed in it or not.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's very interesting to hear you talk about the multi-party systems that you so often see in Europe, where you have to form a coalition government.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And parties have to come together and find some sort of common mm-hmm. ground in order to form a majority.
Mm-hmm.
Very different than the two-party system where you mm-hmm. have here, where you can sit in your own camp and just say, I'm not going to budge.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the type of rhetoric, unfortunately, that has infected our system.
Yeah.
That doesn't allow us to have that dialogue. I have to say, I ran a community dialogue program in Cincinnati about bringing people together who have different points of view. And I understand the power mm-hmm. of bringing people together who may have very different points of view, but you can find some common ground. And too often we don't have that in this country.
And that's where we start. You have to, I've been going to these different workshops and trainings, how to talk effectively about climate change. And that's where you start. You recognize that it's difficult. Mm-hmm. It brings up difficult emotions. We have to mourn this, the world we're going to leave. It's going to be different. So we have to bring the emotions in the table. And it has to. We have to have a willingness to listen to each other in a respectful way.
Yes.
And with the desire to work together. Because this is kind of like Game of Thrones. Like the White Walkers are coming, and climate change is the one that we need to be working together.
Instead of winter is coming, it's a really hot summer that's coming in this case. So, Well, we should go ahead and take a break right now, but we're going to come back here with Just Transitions on labor, environment, and health here on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
It's Meals on Wheels.
1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
You know what really gets a party started? Indoor baseball. Yeah, just find a broom or a pool cue, and you can use, like, anything as a ball. Cans, bottles, shoes.
Hey, bro, toss me that avocado.
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Underage drinking and driving, the ultimate party foul. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Hey, America.
And we're talking about the connections between labor, environment, and health here on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. We are in the midst of Just Transitions. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you, filling in for Charles Showalter. And sitting here in studio with me, as always, Dr. Patty DeMarco. Patty.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan. And delighted to have as my guest today, Kirsi Jansa, a journalist and filmmaker from Finland originally and now from Pittsburgh. And we're talking about the Sustainability Pioneers series and how the little videos of 12 minutes or so are being used to create climate conversations and make it easy for people to understand the positive reactions that we can have to climate change. So, Kirsi, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is a good continuation because in Finland, I used to work for the Finnish Broadcasting Company.
Yeah.
So it was like a public service journalism.
Yeah.
And this is the same. Thanks to my foundation funders right now, all these 9 episodes. I'm editing the 10th and the final one. They are all free online at www.sustainabilitypioneers.com.
Yeah, thank you. And they're very usable if you want to have a way to bring up some information and then create a conversation around it. And for example, you did one on New York, right? And that was a really good contrast to one that you did both in Germany and England. So tell us a little bit about some of the case studies that you've explored in the Sustainability Pioneers.
Mm-hmm. So the very first one, I started with the case like starting where we are here in Pittsburgh in the middle of the ground zero of Marcelo Shale explorations. And so I think that a lot of people don't know that why it's so important that here in Pennsylvania, in a places like Pennsylvania, we talk about this, because Pennsylvania is the third largest emitter of carbon. Yep. And we still have this very low renewable energy goal, 8%
yep.
by 2021 or something like that.
The renewable energy portfolio standard yeah. in Pennsylvania compared to New York and New Jersey, surrounding states, it's less than half. It's 8%. And in our neighboring states, it's 12, 21, 15%. You know, here we're very low.
Yeah. And so we started with the first episode was about like how air quality and climate, how climate change will impact air quality and public health. So getting very personal. And this is all about these stories. I love stories. I love storytelling and power of human voice. And finding these people who are experiencing it in good and bad, whether it's the health impact. And after that, I like set myself on a mission to visit these people and communities, cities, states that are already taking this bold climate action and working on these solutions. And so I visited this small town in Balcombe in the UK, where Australian gas company wanted to frack. And there the people said that, wait, we're going to show you that there is another way. And that was a story of community power, creating, changing the energy system in a way that it benefits the most of the people instead of mm-hmm. the few mm-hmm. stockholders or owners. I went to Germany, the town called Azarbek, which is really inspiring story. Just within, I think it was 2009, they started their climate adaptation and mitigation process, and they had a very inspiring mayor, but yep. he included, and the German had started including in educating their people much earlier, but the mayor included all the people and citizens in the process. They started investing in the process, and within 5 years they were energy independent.
Right.
Now they produce, they have a massive like wind park with solar panels, and they produce biogas to heat the houses from compost waste that is collected from the households. And so they produce 300-400% more renewable energy than the city uses.
And that's not a huge town. It's like 7,000
people. Yeah. And there are several of those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the expert that from Heinrich Böll Foundation that I interviewed, he said that there are these different, this is not the only one. There's
right.
several of those in Germany.
Right.
And now the challenge is then how to make it, bring it to a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him then that, well, this is in Europe. Can it happen in the U.S.? He laughed. He said, oh, yeah, you get all these things you have,
yeah.
like an active civil society and cities going climate neutral, but you have the strong battle from the forces
federal.
Of carbonization, and you don't have the same regulations as here. So
yeah.
it's a different game, but he was
it isn't a technology happened. Problem then, really. It's a matter of will and a matter of placing value on moving to
mm-hmm.
something that is a solution to climate change. So that really requires that you, first of all, recognize that acting on climate change is something we all need to participate in. And the full force and power of the government at all levels should be involved. And if it is, when it is, things move very quickly. And the state of California is one example. The state of New York
mm-hmm.
is another.
That's a great example.
Where they have made a commitment to go in the direction of renewable energy to the extent possible. And they're doing tremendous things.
Mm-hmm.
So you did a study in Ithaca, right? You looked at Ithaca,
I went to Eco Village
yeah.
in Ithaca.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I also spoke with the state people from Reforming the Energy Vision,
yeah.
about the Reforming the Energy Vision, their Governor Cuomo's policy. And yeah, it's really inspiring. But it took them that New York had to face Sandy, and they had what, 5 or 6 these so-called 100-year storms. Yeah. So they are experiencing it firsthand.
Right.
But in the States, where we're kind of seeing the changes, but we're not seeing the drastic changes, so people are more likely to postpone facing the problem. And it doesn't help that the corporate media is still not talking enough and not talking about the solutions.
Right.
I find it impressive and gratifying to hear that, you know, in the face of the helplessness that people feel, the hopelessness that people feel, the fears that people have, that you counter that with bringing a vision and changing the narrative. And through recognizing both that it is an educational issue for, you know, talk to someone's head as well as talk to their heart and talk about those emotional issues they're struggling with. Because we've seen, particularly here in, you know, the quote unquote Rust Belt, we have people whose jobs are tied to the older industries and they feel very threatened.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to create a new vision and create dialogue and talk about solutions that benefit everybody, I think is a way to change the dynamic around this discussion.
Yeah. And this is exactly what our mayor, Bill Peruto, says in the next episode. I asked him about how to involve people in this, and he said that we should also be talking to those people who might feel that their job is threatened in the mining communities in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, that how can we create jobs, build wind farms, wind turbines here instead of importing them from Germany.
Right. And I think this is the next wave of the promotion that we need to be doing for the renewable energy economy, is to show that it is consistent with a closed loop, closed cycle production facilities where we make the systems here and we design them in a way that they can be reused and recycled. Because one of the really exciting things about solar energy, which I learned when I was talking about someone who is involved with mining sand for fracking, that he said, I would much rather be mining sand for making glass for solar systems, because it can be reused and recycled. When the end of the useful life, after 25, 30 years, you can take that glass back and it is renewable and recycled, as opposed to being put down underground forever and mining away mountains for nothing. So I think that concept of moving to a circular economy is totally consistent with building a whole new generation of energy industry jobs around these technologies that can be done locally, because it's much more cost efficient, much more close to the markets, and much more effective. And Kiersey, you've done some work on the job impact of renewable energy, right?
The latest episode, the Home Sweet Home episode, was about there were 3 families in Pittsburgh area that either built a ultra energy efficient home or retrofitted a home. And when I was digging into that, I discovered the numbers are just astonishing. And this is from a Political Economy Institute of University of Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts,
And so it's the truth about job creation, and they say that they study that if you invest $1 million in these industries, you get this many jobs. So natural industry, you get 5 jobs. Coal industry, you get 7 jobs. Wind industry, you get 13. Solar industry, you get 14 jobs. And building retrofits, which is huge, because U.S., that's where we need to start with the building energy, not stop wasting energy with these leaky buildings. So we create, you put $1 million in this industry, in the building retrofit industry, and you create 17 jobs.
Yeah. So compared to the natural gas and coal industry, it's more
5
than
and 7.
Yeah.
So over 3 times as many. Yeah. That's incredible.
And why are we not talking about this?
Yeah.
We're talking about it now, so it's good. we do need to wrap up. I don't know if you have some final thoughts.
Well, I would like to make sure people know that you can go to sustainabilitypioneers.com and obtain these for free for download. There are 10 episodes.
I'm not sure download if they're for free for download, but you can watch them there.
You can watch them, okay.
Share them with your family.
Yeah.
Write letters to your legislators and make sure that they are on board, and talk with your people, because people are social animals. There's a study that shows that even among people who are active on this issue, only those whose friends and colleagues take public action, they are active. So we got to break this climate taboo, and we just got to start talking about climate change and especially about climate solutions.
Everybody reach one person and we'll be making progress. Kiersey, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your work on Sustainability Pioneers.
Thank you.
See you next time.